But I am glad that all of you are here tonight, and I think the snow scared a few other people away tonight too, but I'm glad you're here to celebrate this feast of our great patron. By the way, since I did promise you music, we will sing parts of the Mass, so I want to hear you when we sing, okay? When I first came to St. Raymond's, I didn't know much about St. Raymond of Peñafort, except that he was the patron saint of canon lawyers, and which is something that was, you know, our bishop at when this parish was founded, Bishop Keating was one of the, really, he was one of the most talented canon lawyers in the church at the time. I remember when, right before he died, and there was a rumor that he was going to be moved to Rome to take up a position in some position higher up in the church. And then he had a massive heart attack in Rome, so God spared him of that demotion. But he is the one who named St. Raymond after his patron saint. But he knew more about him than I did. And so this parish is named after a saint who is more than just the author of canon law, as important as that is. You know, the canon law, it is the rules that we of living together in this family. You know, it makes, you know, we are a church of rules, not of men, as they say sometimes. And of course, the rules and sometimes are waived because charity is the first rule, the salvation of souls. But the rules help us live together in peace with each other and in an ordered way, which order is something which is, you know, comes from God. The word logos means reason, you know, that something makes sense, and this all makes sense when you build it together. So being the author, if you will, or the father of canon law is a great thing. But that's not why they made him a saint. There are many great theologians and writers who are not saints. St. Raymond was a saint because, well, he was a saint. He was an amazing man. You know, in the Old Testament, sometimes they list the age of someone when he died. And when they do that, they're not so much trying to say that, you know, the specifically chronological age, it seems many times, but simply to say, well, he was very old, and he was so old that we should recognize that because being old was, growing old was considered to be of special favor from God. The really holy people grew to be very, very old. In St. Raymond's time, I'm not sure exactly, but I imagine the average lifespan of an adult male in Europe was about late 20s. He died at the age of either 99 or 100, depending. We don't know exactly the date when he was born, so either 99 or 100 years. Let's just say 100 because it sounds better. So in that time, he would have been a tremendously old man, and there would probably be nobody around that was nearly his age. This is one of the reasons why whenever he's depicted in art, it's almost always with the long, bushy beard to symbolize his age, that he grew to be so old. And even though it wasn't the Dominican tradition, matter of fact, it was generally against the rules for Dominicans to wear a beard. And if you look at his burial mask, the statue that's on his tomb, he has no beard in that. But in art, he's always depicted with the beard, which might mean he had it because I don't think they would do it without. He wasn't a Dominican until he was 45, so he probably had at least had it most of his life. But it symbolizes for us how old he was and how wise he was. The beard always symbolizes wisdom in iconography. So over that 100 years, he had an awful lot of things that he did besides write one book that's that thick. Now, granted, writing that book that thick meant he had to go through like a whole library of other books and synthesize it into one, but he did that relatively quickly. But his whole life was much more than that. And it's really divided into two parts. the first part until he was about 42, and then we have where he was a professor of theology and canon law from the age 20 to 42. He was a canon of the cathedral in Barcelona, and also then a teacher at different universities, particularly the University of Bologna in Italy, which was the university in Europe at the time. But at 42, around the age of 42, he had this extremely unusual experience that we have depicted in the mural up here, the apparition of the Blessed Mother. Now, that even that story is a little muddled because it's only in all the sources I've read, and I've read as many as I can, they don't tell us how she appeared. Was it in a dream? Was it in a chapel like this? So this is my interpretation of the apparition, okay? And of course, the artist had a little bit to do with it too, but I told him what to paint, and he made it actually nice and beautiful. But this is in a certain way, it seems a little bit of a turning point in his life. Now, this apparition was to him because he was the spiritual director of the man who became known as St. Peter Nolasco, who was to found the Mercedarians. And the Blessed Mother wanted St. Raymond to help him to do this, particularly spiritually, to help him to form this new order in a rational way, according to the traditions, but also with the fullness of spiritual advice. On the other hand, at the same time, this all happened in one evening. The Blessed Mother appeared to all three of them, Peter Nolasco, St. Raymond, and King James of Aragon. At the time, and the king was supposed to give him financial support, Raymond was supposed to give him spiritual support. But that she would appear to Raymond shows the respect, if you will, that the Blessed Mother had for Raymond and his personal holiness. And from here, within a couple years, it's interesting he didn't join the Mercedarians that he is considered co-founder of. Rather, he became a Dominican, a relatively new order. He probably knew St. Dominic because St. Dominic had his priests in Bologna going to school there. And the Dominicans, the reason he became a Dominican, I think, is because it was an order of teachers and preachers. And he was one of the best teachers and preachers around. And he wanted to move from being a diocesan priest, which he was, to having a more deeper, if you will, deeper spirituality in the order. To be called to religious order is a deeper vocation. But he chose the order of preachers, I'm sure, because the Lord wanted them to, but also the devotion they had to Mary and then their role as teachers. And I'm sure, I'm also guessing that they recruited him pretty heavily. But he became an outstanding Dominican. And then one of the first things that they did when they got him in was they ordered him to write a book about confession. Not for the lay people, but for confessors, to help them to understand how to hear confessions and particularly how to deal with difficult situations in the confession. And he was the most brilliant among them at the time, and he was the one who understood this the best. And so what this took was a clear understanding of the sacrament, a clear understanding of moral theology, and a clear understanding of canon law, which was always part of this. And so he wrote this book that became suddenly famous and made him famous throughout Europe, and it became the book that priests used for centuries in referring to how to handle difficult situations in the confessional, including to be compassionate, but also to be, clear. To be a true physician there, you have to sometimes cut as well as to solve, But then this came to the attention of the Holy Father in Rome, and he brought him to Rome to be his personal confessor because, he understands confession better than anyone else, so he's going to be my confessor. And then after that, and within relatively quickly, he He gave him the assignment to be in charge of all confessions in the church, which basically today is the office of the grand penitentiary of the church, they call him. My friend Cardinal Baum used to be the grand penitentiary of the church. He used to take all the hard cases that would come that would be referred to Rome. And every once in a while, a priest will send one to Rome that he can't handle, or that it's maybe, for example, a priest is excommunicated by something he does, that would go to him, etc. Which is why then it's, the Pope has, the keys of the kingdom. One is gold and one is silver. I don't know if you ever noticed that. But the gold one is the spiritual dominion he has. The silver one is the temporal dominion he has over the church. And so St. Raymond is always depicted as having the gold key, which you see in that painting up there. But not in this painting, because that was before he went to Rome. So the two key icons in iconography for him are his beard and his key, as he had the power over the spiritual realm in the church, in a certain sense. Then the Pope asked him to, because he was so good and so smart, the Pope asked him, you pull together the canon law, all these decretals that have been written over 1,000 years, you pull it all together, put it in one book. And when he did that, the Pope issued a decree saying, everybody's got to use that, throw out all the other decretals, this is what we'll use from now on. And so he became famous for that. Then, as time went on, when St. Dominic died and Blessed Jordan, as the successor in the Dominicans, died, then the Dominicans elected him the head of their order. And which is a tremendous honor when you think about it, when you think of all the saints and all the theologians that came out of there, came out of the Dominicans, including, besides St. Thomas Aquinas, I'm having a brain freeze, but we can look at the period, and there's all sorts of saints and theologians. They were the theologians in the church at the time, and he was elected to be their leader. Now, he didn't want to be their leader, though. He didn't want to be in charge. He always avoided administrative positions if he could help it. He wanted to be active, and so they tasked him, they asked him in the general chapter to rewrite the rules of the order, what they call the constitutions, because the constitutions were built under St. Dominic when they were a little tiny order, and now they were this great big huge order with thousands and thousands of priests. And so he rewrote them because he was an expert at this kind of thing. And he slipped in there, like a good lawyer would, a little provision hidden away that the master general of the order could resign whenever he wanted to. So they passed these, they voted on them, they passed it without reading them, or not reading them carefully enough, and the next day he resigned. He said he was too old to be the master general of the order. He was 65 after all. At that time, again, a very old age, very old man. But he would go on for another 35 years in ministry. He went back to Barcelona, but at the same time, the Pope said, here, take the key with you. And so he kept him in the same job and didn't have to stay in Rome anymore. And he continued to help the Pope, but also to preach, to write, and in particular to work on the conversion of the Muslims who were in Spain. Remember, the Muslims had conquered the lower half of Spain. And at the time, for 700 years, really, the Spaniards tried to conquer it back, which was finally accomplished. Finally, the last part was in 1492. But King James of Aragon was very much working on this. But at the same time, you conquer these new areas, and then what are you going to do with all the people living there who've been for 500 years Muslim? And so he was very much about preaching to the Muslims, preaching to the Jews as well. There were many Jews in Spain, been a haven for Jews where they had felt persecuted in other countries. And so he very much believed in preaching to them, not forcing them, but preaching to them. And he had the Dominicans learn, they set up a school of Arabic there in Spain, so the Dominicans learned how to preach to them. And he's credited with conversion and baptism of like something like 30,000 Muslim and Jews. He also had convinced the king, who was his good friend, to allow the head rabbi of Aragon to come in and to debate in the cathedral with a Dominican priest who is a convert from Judaism, to convert, to argue, debate their religions. So it was really a unique thing, extremely unique thing, and so we have the theme of religious liberty that's in his background, that the Jew would have a freedom to do that in the Middle Ages was amazing. And then, of course, the famous story that we have way over here in this mural. With still about 4 or 5 years on his life left, St. Raymond was asked by the king to go with him and preach to the Muslims in Mallorca. He had conquered Mallorca and wanted to convert them. And so Raymond agreed to go and preach to them. But then when he got there, he found out that the king had brought his girlfriend along, and the king was married at the time. And he insisted that the king send his girlfriend away. The king refused, and so he said, well, then I'm leaving. And he walked down to the shore. You know the story. The ships had been ordered by the king not to take him anywhere under pain of arrest. So he stepped on the water, threw out his cape, and sailed across 160 miles back to Barcelona. And all the books I've ever read about this say that there were witnesses, hundreds of witnesses on both shores when he did this. And then he actually sailed past ships that were on the sea. Shows us here this, you know, he lived to be 100 because he was this man of great faith, a man of great holiness. And all he did, this, you know, he stepped on the water and sailed away. Faith in Jesus. Remember that St. Peter actually slipped into the water. Remember that story? And he, you know, and St. Peter walked out a little bit, but then he fell. And Jesus says, well, you have little faith. Now, St. Raymond made it 160 miles, so I'm sure Jesus was saying to him, oh, you have great faith. And so, and the reason he left was, again, marriage. He was defending marriage, the integrity of marriage, even to the king. It's very, very similar in a very strong way to St. Thomas More. We would note, too, both of them are patron saints of lawyers, not just canon lawyers, because in those days, canon law and law was the same thing. They were overlapped. So he is a great, great saint, not just, you know, the author of canon law, but this man of deep faith, a man, a great confessor, patron saint of confessors in the confessional, patron saint of marriage, and he's, you know, one of his books is dedicated to the sacrament of marriage, and it's a beautiful treatise on marriage. And then his defense of marriage. And then, of course, his devotion to the Blessed Mother. His devotion to charity. You know, he was forming the Mercedarian order to the Mercedarians were, their first task was to ransom back Christians who had been captured by the Muslims, usually on ships, and were either sold into slavery or forced into conversion and used as slaves themselves. And so the Mercedarians were given the task by the Blessed Mother to ransom these. And so that's why she's called Our Lady of Ransom. So the king was helping them financially to raise the money. But if they couldn't raise the money, or if it wasn't enough or whatever, the Blessed Mother told them to give yourselves. And so the Mercedarians would offer themselves to replace the Christian who had been captured. And so this was a man who was given the charge by the Blessed Mother to form these men at that time into this very difficult calling. What a great man for us today. We talk about proclaiming the gospel. He was all about that. You know, he could have been just a bureaucrat in Rome. You know, he could have been just, you know, in charge of the Dominicans. He could have been a professor. He was all those things. But that wasn't what he was about. What he was about was Jesus. What he was about was spreading the Catholic faith. In charity and respect, but always in truth and clarity. He's a great patron for all of us. He's been a great patron to me. I've gone to him in prayer so many times, and he's done wonderful things for me. And whatever good things have happened in this parish, I attribute to the Blessed Mother and to St. Raymond, because they've been hard at work in this parish over the last 20 years, but I know for the last 10 years for me. So I commend you to their patronage, to turn to them, to turn to Our Lady of Branson, and most especially in particular, turn to St. Raymond. He's not just some professor writing a book. He's one with great compassion and love and faith, who wants to help you in your daily life to become the great Christian that God is calling you to be. Let us turn to St. Raymond now and realize he's with us at this Mass. Ask for his intercession and his aid, and grow by his example. Praise be Jesus.